Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
And you're listening to IMC Radio News. This week, an interview with J.P. Austin of Citizens for a Responsible Community regarding the recent attacks on U of I Chancellor Nancy Cantor, an excerpt from a talk by Dominican sister Beth Murphy on the situation in Iraq, and a report on student reaction to the HBO documentary of slave narratives, Unchained Memories. But first, these headlines.
This story was reported on the National Indie Media website. Crying Yankee go home, 100,000 peace demonstrators protested in Ankara, the Turkish capital, on March 1st. While the protesters were in the streets, the Turkish parliament was behind closed doors debating a measure that would permit the U.S. to use Turkey as a base for its planned attack on Iraq. Earlier in the day, the anti-war platform which organized the protest presented a petition against war with a million signatures to the parliament. In the evening, the parliament failed to pass the measure. The 264 votes in favor did not achieve the required simple majority. 251 voted against and 19 abstained. The leaders of the ruling Justice and Development Party, AKP, were shocked by the outcome and by the large number of AKP members of parliament who defied them to vote against the measure. The AKP leadership may resubmit the measure as soon as Tuesday.
The following headline comes from the UCIMC Newswire. A new report on involuntary medical debt will be released on Wednesday. The report, The Consequences of Medical Debt, Evidence from Three Communities, is being released by the Access Project, a resource center affiliated with Brandeis University, in conjunction with three community partners, Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, Human Service Coalition of Dade County in Miami, Florida, and Tenants and Workers Support Community in Alexandria, Virginia. Interviews with individuals, social service providers, and healthcare providers in the three communities found that the effects of medical debt include restricted access to healthcare, damaged credit status, and even financial ruin. Customers with medical debt were deterred from seeking needed medical care. Medical debt made it harder to achieve self-sufficiency, to get a bank loan and other lines of credit, and to save money or to pay for basic goods and services. The report will officially be released on Wednesday, March 5th at 10 a.m. at the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers Office, 44 East Main Street, number 208 in Champaign, Illinois. Copies of the report will be available.
The National Indie Media website reports that on Friday, February 28th, over 1,000 people converged on Taco Bell headquarters in Irvine, California, to show their solidarity with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. More than 70 farm workers and supporters in one of the largest hunger strikes in U.S. labor history are pressing for what would be their first wage increase in 25 years. Protesters are asking Taco Bell to agree to pay one penny more per pound of tomatoes and pass the penny on to the workers. That would effectively double the farm workers' wages. Working conditions in the fields are so bad that in the past 5 years, the U.S. Department of Justice has won conviction on 6 cases of slavery in Florida. 3 of these cases were against tomato growers. While such cases are extreme, the sweatshop-like conditions in Florida's fields are a reality for the significant percentage of farm workers who pick the tomatoes that go into Taco Bell's products.
And the following story was reported on the National Indie Media website. A week after millions took to the streets, transports of materials and soldiers from U.S. military bases in Europe to the Gulf region continue, as do actions against them. In Italy, Defense Minister Martino guaranteed the use of public infrastructures for U.S. transport without the necessary approval of the parliament. The anti-war movement has responded with train stopping. Since February 21st, hundreds of protesters in daily actions have tried to block 26 convoys on their way to the Camp Darby military base near Pisa. Activists from all over Italy are now heading to Pisa, while police try to keep control of the train stations. Since February 23rd, train personnel have been defined as military personnel. While the train workers do not get much support from their labor union, the dock workers union has announced that they will not load military equipment on the ships. The British consulate was occupied in Torino, and other actions are expected also in Ferrara, where police attacked a crowd of 1,000 people, as well as in Udine. At Magdalena Isle near Sardinia, another 1,000 activists were roughly cleared out by the police. That takes care of headlines for today. Thanks to Kevin Heinrich for coordinating them and reading them here live. The U of I chancellor has become a target for personal attacks in recent weeks, and IMC reporter Ondine Gross brings us the following interview with a community member involved in a group responding to these attacks.
We're here today with J.P. Austin, a community representative of Citizens for a Responsible Community. Thank you for joining us today, J.P.
Thanks for having me on the show.
J.P., tell us about Citizens for a Responsible Community. All that most of us know in town is that a new billboard went up on Prospect and Bradley that says, support our chancellor, support our university. Tell us a little bit about Citizens for a Responsible Community and maybe how that billboard came to be.
Sure. A group of us were really a bit frustrated by the real personal attacks on Chancellor Cantor that occurred a few weeks ago. And we decided to actually do something about it.
So you're talking about Nancy Cantor, the Chancellor of the University of Illinois.
That's correct.
Now, there were some other billboards that said, restore the chief, return Cantor. Is that what your group was reacting to?
That's exactly right. Our feeling is that the community as a whole needs to debate issues that are important to this community. And certainly what the U of I does, what the leadership at the university does, is exceedingly important. Issues that affect all of us need to be debated seriously by all of this community. The problem that we had with the particular billboards was that we felt it went beyond that type of discussion, and it became very much personal and really demeaning to somebody that we tried hard to bring to the University of Illinois. This is a woman who's renowned nationally and really almost internationally. You may disagree with her, some of her principles or philosophies as it relates to one or two things, but certainly this is somebody with high energy, who's well thought of, who we tried very hard to bring to Champaign-Urbana. And to demean her publicly is really the very least unfortunate and actually very harmful. Very harmful to the university, very harmful to this community. Professors may find it very difficult to come into an environment that's contentious. When it comes to personal attacks to people who have families, she has school-aged children in this community. And we really felt it went beyond the debates, and once it became personal, we felt it needed to be responded to.
It seems like Chancellor Cantor is really being attacked over the chief, when isn't it true that the office of the chancellor does not make any decisions about the chief and that she's never even issued a public statement pro or against the chief?
That's exactly right, Undine. The chancellor seems to have absolutely no power as it relates to deciding the fate of the chief. Whatever your position is on the chief, it is one issue that this chancellor and this university has to deal with. We don't want to become a one-issue university.
I read a letter to the editor in the News Gazette recently that said, that expressed concern that the way Nancy Cantor is being treated over this chief would keep anyone from ever considering that job, because it becomes just a lightning rod for this dispute. It seems like the chief issue is so divisive, and whether you're for or against the chief, it is not going away. It is a costly debate. It is a personal attack debate. And it just seems to get uglier by the minute, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think what we want to get to is the point where we can actually debate a contentious issue like the chief. Serious issues like the possible looming war in Iraq without getting personal. Yeah. In fact, some have said that the billboards were really an attempt, a nefarious attempt to undermine the chancellor's credibility and undermine her ability to do all the things that she wants to do.
Some have even said that she gets this flack because she's a woman, because she's a Jewish woman, because she's from out of Illinois. Seems like it's just not acceptable to have a chancellor who dares to promote ideas that might not be popular.
Well, I think if people have a problem with some of her positions, I think it's perfectly legitimate to debate them in a public way, in a public forum. and counter her arguments with arguments of their own. But when the attacks become personal, then I think it warrants that we as a community say that this is unacceptable.
Do you feel that the newspaper coverage of Nancy Cantor has been fair? I mean, do you feel that her national reputation and positive attributes are highlighted? Or do you feel that when we read about Nancy Cantor, it's only because of her stance on free speech or the chief or diversity or these things that are somehow portrayed in a negative way?
I think that's true. There certainly is a minority in this community who are against most of her stated policies. And maybe one of the ways that they can bring that voice to life is through the paper.
Now, Citizens for Responsible Community has done some outreach to the business leaders of this town. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Are they concerned that it reflects poorly on the community to have this kind of these kind of billboards, and that it just does not reflect nicely on Champaign-Urbana?
Well, I can tell you, one of the business leaders told me that they felt very strongly about that, but their position and that particular bank's board's leadership was that they should just let it go away, mm-hmm. and not challenge it, and not bring this guy any more publicity mm-hmm. than he's had over the last 4 weeks.
Are there any other activities that Citizens for a Responsible Community are promoting?
We had a letter writing open house last week, the goal of which is to make it easy for people to write letters to the editor of our local newspaper. We're also planning a petition to the University of Illinois Board of Trustees in support of the chancellor.
I want to thank you very much, Dr. Austin, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
For IMC Radio, this is Ondine Gross.
Holding hands at midnight, 'neath the starry sky. Nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Strolling with the one girl, sighing sigh after sigh. Nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try.
A Dominican sister spoke last week on the conditions in Iraq. John Fettig produced the following excerpt from her talk.
On Tuesday, February 25th, Sister Beth Murphy, a Dominican sister from Springfield, Illinois, gave a talk entitled Seeing Iraq, Opening the Door to Peace. Here she describes what she saw in her two visits to Iraq and what she anticipates will happen in the event of a war.
This is Hussein. He's 4 years old, and he has a lymphatic cancer that has metastasized. Theoretically, all the medicines that the doctors in Iraq need available to them through the oil food program. But what actually happens is that the United States and Britain, for the most part, the two members of the UN Security Council who do this, they can put holds on the contracts that request goods through the oil food program. Currently, the last figure I heard was about 1,200 contracts for goods are on hold. So they didn't have the medicine they needed for Hussein when they needed it, and as a result, his cancer got out of control. The other problem that Hussein has is it doesn't happen all the time anymore, but they don't all. Another thing that doesn't often get through is the equipment, the medical equipment that they need. And they needed to reuse an IV needle for Hussein because they didn't have new ones. And through that, he contracted hepatitis. From 1980 to 88, Iraq and Iran were at war, and Basra was ground zero for that war. And then the Gulf War began in 1991. And if you live in Iraq, the Gulf War never ended. We have been bombing Iraq nearly weekly for 12 years, although most people in the United States don't realize that. And Basra is the receiving end of the bulk of those bombs. So it has never really recovered from the Gulf War, and it's one of the most devastated areas of the country. During the Gulf War, we used a weapon that we had developed during the Cold War but never used before. Anti-tank missiles that were, the shells of which were made out of depleted uranium, the uranium from the nuclear power plants in the United States. And they used this metal because it's very dense and it can cut through a tank like butter. It's a great way to get the nuclear waste out of our country and someplace else. 320 tons of the stuff were used during the Gulf War. 300 tons in Basra Governorate alone. Right? That is 10 times the amount that the U.S. and British military estimated would begin to cause cancer. cancer and radiation deaths. Right? Now that's in the soil. The soldiers breathe it in, not only the Iraqi soldiers, but our soldiers. And it has begun to cause these skyrocketing cancer rates, not only among the Iraqis, but among U.S. soldiers. You've heard the term Gulf War Syndrome. Some of that is from this depleted uranium that our soldiers inhaled while they were marching through southern Iraq and Kuwait. Mm-hmm. Iraq did not know, and the United States did not admit that it used these weapons until about 1996, 5 years after the war. And the doctors were seeing all these kinds of cancers that they'd never seen before, plus a huge increase. And you've got other things happening, too. You've got little kids, baby boys and baby girls with prostate cancer and uterine cancer. You've got women giving birth to malformed children. And all of this, they're saying, is a possible side effect of this depleted uranium. A study that Dr. Al-Ali did with the University of Baghdad indicates that 40% of the population of Basra province will eventually die of radiation poisoning. That's 750,000 people. To give you something to compare that with, 350,000 people died of radiation poisoning or death from the bomb that we dropped on Hiroshima in the 1940s. What will be the consequences if we have a war? One of the principal things I'm worried about as a Dominican sister is what's going to happen to the Christian population in Iraq. So when we visited with the bishops, the two Chaldean deputy archbishops, and the Latin bishop of Baghdad, they were very frightened to see what this war might mean for them. And when we asked Bishop Don Slaman, we just asked him point blank, what's going to happen to the Christians? He used two words, anarchy and massacre. And I think it's really, really important to understand when I say that, that it's not going to be the Iraqi government that slaughters the Christians. Whenever there's a war, you unleash all kinds of forces. There's the Kurds, the Shiites, the Sunnis, for whom Christianity is directly associated with the West. You know, so when Saddam Hussein, or when George Bush calls for a crusade, or when Jerry Falwell goes on national television and calls Muhammad a terrorist, it's having a real effect on real people who live not only in Iraq, but in all of the Middle East. And so whether we perceive this to be a religious war or not, that is the way it is perceived in Iraq. And in the chaos of war, the Christians are anticipating grave, grave consequences. The Pentagon is estimating that they can accept 15,000 dead U.S. soldiers. That's okay with them. We lose 15,000 troops. Civilian deaths will be massive. They're planning on using something called shock and awe to take over Baghdad. And it is not at all proportionate to what we're trying to accomplish. So it would not fall under even the Catholic just war theory. There will be mass starvation, there will be mass migration, and most of the countries surrounding Iraq have said we will not take refugees. So people are going to end up in tent cities in the desert. And that's what the Mennonite Central Committee and the American Friends Service Committee and the Middle East Council of Churches and the Catholic Near East Welfare Association are preparing for. They're getting ready to put up tents and provide people with blankets out in the desert. I've been in that desert. It is not a hospice, and there will be no running water up there. So as a result, the entire region is also going to be destabilized politically. We have no idea how some of these other countries are going to respond. Jordan, I know more about Jordan because we talked to the former Jordanian ambassador. He said the first thing is Jordan is 100% dependent on Iraq for its energy resources. So once the war starts, there's no more oil and the Jordan economy collapses. Jordan already does not have enough water to give to people, and they've got many other very high unemployment, other kinds of problems. So it's only going to make it worse for them. People anticipate an increase in anti-American terrorism. So instead of really fighting terrorism, we've created the conditions in which it can thrive. And there's some speculation that if Saddam Hussein is foolish enough to try to attack, you know, Israel and get some of the Scud missiles into Israel, that Ariel Sharon will respond with a nuclear bomb. And then where will it be?
For more information about the social justice programs that Sister Murphy is a part of, you can send an email to missionoutreachteam@hotmail.com. This is John Fettig reporting for IMC Radio News.
There's only so much.
eat that rubber food. You're gonna say, well, that's all there is, I'm eating it. I guess it must be good. There's only so many times you can sit and watch TV. Stay detached and think it's stupid that you're somehow free. Oh, America will leave you. Oh, America will leave you. Oh, America will leave you. Up.
Crystal Marshall, who you may know from the Saturday morning show Rise Africa Rise here on WEFT, produced the following piece on local reactions to the HBO documentary Unchained Memories.
The HBO documentary called Unchained Memories, Readings from the Slave Narratives, depicts the history of slavery and the experiences of Africans upon their arrival to the United States of America. Black actors and actresses perform narrative excerpts from the collection of materials gathered during the Great Depression of the 1930s. At this time, out-of-work writers were employed by the Federal Writers Project and sent to 17 states in the South. They were told to gather the accounts of former slaves, and this resulted in over 2,000 slave narratives and 500 photographs, which are now housed at the Library of Congress for study and research. The HBO documentary, Unchained Memories, was sent to 20 campuses in the United States to educate young viewers about their history. Here are the reactions from young viewers at the University of Illinois campus.
What slave narrative or what comment from the audience affected you the most?
The narrative that Jasmine Guy recited, basically she was talking about how she came to be, how her character was born, and basically her character was born out of rape, and her mother was raped by the white slave master, and the force and the anger and the pain that she talked with. However, she was still, I mean, obviously she was glad to be alive, but she recognized that the circumstances surrounding her birth and how many African Americans were born through that, and how their lives after that are extremely difficult.
When we hear, we just see how devastating was the slavery for America. But I got to tell you also that slavery was even more devastating for Africa. Mm-hmm. We're still there. People don't want to help us, and they don't want to understand that if we are where we are now, it's because of history. If you don't take that into account, you would never have a real solution for Africa. It's the same way, like in America also. So people don't, they just forget the history. There will be never will be a way out for Black America.
I think we all need to take the personal responsibility to understand how the human condition or the circumstances surrounding the humans in a community can change to allow the human mind to really, really look at the legitimacy of slavery. And the reason why I say that this is significant is because I don't think we can end slavery in any part of the world if we don't recognize that it can be practiced by anybody in any part of the world. And I don't think it's always to address the issue of who was the slave master and who was the slave, but in reality, what did we do as a people to allow this to happen? And that's the only way we can end it.
If you'd like to learn more about this subject, you can access the slave narratives online at the Library of Congress website, Born in Slavery, as well as learn about the HBO documentary Unchained Memories, Readings from the Slave Narratives at the HBO website, www.hbo.com. From the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, I'm Crystal Marshall.
Thank you. southern trees bear a strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar tree.
That wraps up IMC Radio News for this week. Contributors to the program included Ondine Gross, John Fettig, Crystal Marshall, Kevin Heinrich, and myself, Clint Popetz. If you'd like to volunteer to help produce this program, you can drop by the IMC at 218 West Main Street in downtown Urbana at 6:30 on Thursday evenings for the weekly meeting of the IMC Radio News Group. The meeting is open to the public, and no experience is necessary to get involved, just a desire to make news that states your views. You can also call 344-8820 extension 1 or email radio@ucimc.org. Online archives of this show are available on the IMC website, www.ucimc.org. Coming up next, the Friday Forum. Thanks for listening, and take care.
Pastor Lucene of the gallant South, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth. Of Magnolia, sweet and fresh, and in the sudden smell of the trees.